want to give you a way of understanding the sin of the Meraglim that answers a lot of questions that each one could be answered probably individually, but it's much better to have one thread that ties them all together and answers them all. Start with quite a few questions, and then we'll understand the Inyan and then see how it answers all the questions. Right away, the Torah tells us that the Rabbanu Shlom tells Moshe Rabbeinu, Shlach lecha anashim. You say, I'm not going to command you to send them. If you want to send them on your own. Now on the surface, if I had heard from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he doesn't think it's a great idea to send these people, but if I want to do it on my own, I can, I think I'd get the hint and not send them. And yet Moshe sends them, even though the Rabbanu Shlom told him he's not going to command them to send them. Now did Moshe know that there was a plot? Somebody close the door, maybe. Did Moshe Rabbeinu know there was a plot in formation, and yet he still sent them is very difficult to understand. On the other hand, to say that he didn't know, then why did he daven for Yoshua, Kor Yoshiach, on the Achas Meraglim? That the Rabbanu Shlom should save you from the plot of the spies. Seems that he knew there was a plot. So why did he send it? Which makes that even more difficult is that Chazal say, Kulam Anoshim, Melamed Shehoyim Tzadikim Ba'oso Es. That when they were chosen, they all were Tzadikim. If they were plotting to bring back a Diba, a bad report, what kind of Tzadikim were they? And Rashi himself contradicts himself. Because later on it says, Vayelchu Vayavo, they went and they came back. Hukash Halichosam Lebiyosam. Just like when they came back with a bad report. When they left, they had already been contemplating giving a bad report. So they weren't tzaddikim. Here Rashi says they were tzaddikim from the very beginning. And here it says that they were already Rishoyim when they left. Then there is another problem. Moshe Rabbeinu tells the spies, V'hishchazaktem ulakachtem mipri ha'aretz. You should strengthen yourselves and take from the fruit. Moshe Rabbeinu commanded them to take the fruit. Yet one Medrash says that in the end, only 10 of them actually took fruit, brought fruit back. 8 of them took the grapes, these 8 people to carry this cluster of grapes, and one took a rimon, and one took a te'ena. That was it. Who didn't take, says the Medrash? Kalei ben Yoshua. Shalohayu ba'oso etzah. Kalev and Yoshua, who were not part of the plot, they didn't take. Seems that taking the fruit was part of the plot, yet Moshe told them to take the fruit. There's another medrash that says that the 10 spies didn't want to take any fruit. And Yoshua and Kalev drew their swords, and they said, either you take the fruit, or we'll kill you or you'll kill us, one of the two. But you're going to take that fruit over our dead body. So it seems like taking the fruit was something they had to do, yet Yoshua and Kalev didn't take. So which was it? Was taking the fruit positive, negative? And if it was negative, then why did Moshe tell them to take the fruit? And why didn't Yoshua and Kalev listen to Moshe Rabbeinu? And why did they force the other ones to take the fruit? Very difficult. Another difficulty. The Meraglim said, Ki chazaku mimenu. They came back, they said that the enemy is even stronger than God. There's no way that even God could conquer them. Now, were they infantile? Were they think these people with their axes and swords and slingshots could overpower the Ribbono Shel Olam? What was their understanding of God? How could they say such a thing? A kindergarten child wouldn't say such a thing. What did they mean? Let me tell you what I think. There's another medrash that instead of saying by Yehoshua, Ka Yoshiacha me'atzas meraglim, but Ka Yoshiacha me'atzas hador hazeh, God should save you from the Eitza of this generation. That leads me to believe the following. There's two ways of understanding Atzas Meraglim. Atzas Meraglim can mean the plot, the Eitza of these spies, or it can mean the Eitza to send spies, the whole concept of sending spies. The fact that it says Atzas Hador Hazeh in place of Atzas Meraglim leads me to believe that the second way is the true way. It doesn't mean there was already a plot underway of these spies specifically of bringing back a bad report. But there was a Eitza, a philosophy, a attitude of that generation that led to sending the spies that somehow was blemished. And that's what has to be explained. What was that exactly? The people knew that the Hanhaga, the way the Ribbono Shel Olam was Mashgiach and Klal Yisrael of the desert, was going to change when they got to Eretz Yisrael. For various reasons. Partly because of the Chet HaEgel, partly because that was the way it was supposed to be. Naturally. In the desert, everything happened by miracle. They needed food, man came down to the heavens. They needed water, they had a be'er that traveled with them. They did sins, they got punished immediately. In supernatural ways. Everything happened miraculously. That kind of hashgacha is called hashgachas nisim gluyim. God deals with the Jewish people in an open, miraculous way. Supernatural miracles. There was a cloud of fire and a cloud that went with them. Everything was miraculous. When they came to Eretz Israel, again, for various reasons that's not important now to discuss why, they knew that the Hanhaga was going to change. That they were going to be led in a different hashkacha through Teva, through nature. As the Ramban says in the beginning of the Chukosai, things were going to happen through Nisim Nistorim, hidden miracles. Miracles that were Bederech HaTeva. You keep the mitzvahs, it'll rain in the proper time, you'll plant, you'll plow, you'll have good crops. That's a miracle because rainfall has nothing to do with keeping mitzvahs. But it's a miracle that happens through natural means, through natural channels, not through supernatural channels. And that's the way the Ribbono Shel Olam wants, even the ideal way to deal with the world, as long as we have bechira, that our Bechira shouldn't be compromised by miracles constantly. But we should have free choice and we should make the choices. But he wants that we should be able to be aided in our free choice so we can see clearly the connection between Torah and mitzvahs and nature. Nature is positive when Torah and mitzvahs are kept, and it becomes negative when Torah and mitzvahs are not kept. After the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, there was another Hanhaga, different kind of Hashgacha. And that's called Hester Pono, where we don't even see a correlation, a relationship between what seems to be nature and Torah and mitzvahs. Everything seems to be haphazard, depending on social, economic, political causes, and not on Torah and mitzvahs. That's called Hester Pono. Says the Vilna Gaon, all of these changes, these different kinds of hashgachos, are only from our side, how we see them. but from God's side, they're all the same thing. God is in constant control of everything that happens in this world, except for our free choice. Everything else, Hakol bidei shamayim chutz meyirah shamayim. And the Ribono Shel Olam is mashgiach on everything. Nothing happens in this world that's not Yad Hashem. However, in certain periods, we see it clearly. In certain periods, it's somewhat hidden. And in certain periods, it's completely hidden. But that doesn't mean that God's not there. Even Hester Panim doesn't mean that God makes the world Hester. It means he hides his face. He's still there. He's just working from behind the screen. And all we can see is the screen. We don't see the one behind it. So Mitzav Hashem, it's all the same. And therefore, the Michtam Meliyahu says very clearly when it comes to nature that natural things are not cause and effect. In other words, you don't make your living. You go to work and you are the cause of your parnasa. That is not true. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives parnasa just like he gives money. Has nothing to do with our causing it. Except in a time when things have to happen, the Derech HaTeva, we are chayiv to make hishtablus. We have to make hishtablus as a condition. It's a prerequisite. It's a condition. It's not a cause. We put in our effort. God is the one who provides the parnasa, no different than sending the money. But we have to make it look natural. So we have to put in a hishtablus. The fact that the hishtablus is only a condition and not a cause should be pretty obvious. Because people could make all the right hishtablus and still not have a parnasa. Right? There are people who have gone to university, gotten degree upon degree, are qualified to be doctors, lawyers, engineers, lived in the Soviet Union, right? And then left there, came to America, came to Israel. There's a glut of doctors, lawyers, and engineers, so they're cleaning people in the offices of other doctors, lawyers, and engineers. But they're qualified, maybe even more qualified than the office that they're cleaning. There are people who have all the right credentials, who did all the right things, can't find the job, and are looking through garbage cans for meals. And there are people whose hishtablus is absurd and became millionaires. Two examples I can give you. I don't know if you're familiar with both of them, but about 20 years ago, in America, I don't know if they still have it now, somebody came up with this brilliant idea of how to make a living. He was going to take rocks, regular rocks from outside, put them in a colorful box with a picture of a cage on the box, call it a pet rock, put a page of instructions how to take care of this pet, very inexpensive pet, doesn't eat, doesn't need to be taken for walks, right, could live in that box for the rest of its life, and what's it called, it'll outlive everybody who ever has the pet. And he's going to sell these. Okay. Now, anybody in their right mind would not have invested in this, because why would anybody normal buy a rock in a box with a piece of paper, have printed on it instructions how to use it, when you can go outside and for free get as many pet rocks as you want? You can make a whole zoo for free. And you can print up your own instructions and get your own box. Right? Everything costs, the rock, the box, the piece of paper, maybe 10 cents, and he was going to sell it for $9.99. $10, right, to buy a rock in a cardboard box with a piece of paper that tells you how to take care of it. Does it make any sense? If anybody asked me to invest in that great idea, I would tell them that you have rocks in your head. Right? Yet the man became a millionaire overnight. There were enough millions of crazy Americans that bought it. Right? Or another great idea. Someone decided that having a beautiful, cute doll, right, is no big deal. So he was going to create the ugliest doll that you can imagine, right? Cabbage Patch dolls. Right? That, I know some kids who look like that, but in any case, But who's going to buy their daughter an ugly doll? But leave it to Americans, right? Millions of people bought Cabbage Patch dolls. The man became a millionaire overnight. So to think that Parnassa is cause and effect, there's enough proof that it doesn't work like that. You fulfill a condition, and then if the Rebbe Shem wants to give you Parnassa, he'll give it, and if not, not. But you are chayev to make a hishtadlus. Whatever that hishtadlus may be, and it has to be, normally it has to be a normal hishtadlus. So teva doesn't mean that we're in control. Teva means that we have to make it look as if we are making an effort, and then God is the one who is involved behind the scenes in making the result. We do not cause the result. We only make the effort. That's it. Now the people of that generation didn't understand that. And they understood that if God is going to change his hashgacha, and he's going to make it that everything's going to happen b'derech hateva, then b'derech hateva, that means we are the cause. And they therefore felt that in order to prepare for that new hashgacha, they're going to have to do things in a natural way, which they were right. The mistake was that their doing, they thought, was the cause of the results, not merely a prerequisite and the fulfillment of a condition, and in the end, God is the one who does anyway and makes it look natural. The same God who makes the man come down, the same God who gives you your parnasa when you earn a paycheck, which also is very clear, it's not cause and effect. Person works, he's guaranteed that he's going to get a check because he worked. He digs ditches, so the ditches are going to create bread? No. He digs ditches, his employer is going to pay him. He's going to go buy the bread. How many things can go wrong between the digging of the ditches and eating that bread? His employer may decide never to pay him. The employer may go bankrupt. The banks may go bankrupt. The money system may completely fail. Right? There may be no more bread in the country. There may be a drought. Right? A total destruction of all the bread. So just because I dug ditches means I am causing bread to have my table, it's absurd. Elamai is a lot of conditions that I'm not in control of. So who's in control of them? Obviously the Rebbe Shalom. So whether I'm going to have bread on my table because I dug ditches or not is not cause and effect, almost obviously. So they didn't understand this. Now that sounds absurd because you understand it. I understand it. I'm telling it to you. That means they were less understanding than I am, and you are. And aside from that, why did Moshe Rabbeinu have to send Meraglim? Just explain to them, give them a shiur. Call them all together and says, listen guys, you have a bad idea. This Aksas Hador Hazeh, the Aksas Meraglim, the idea of sending spies because you fear you're going to have to orchestrate Kibush Haaretz, right, is a mistake. When God said he's going to do everything naturally, he didn't mean that you're the cause. He's still the cause. He meant it's going to look like it's natural. But he's still doing it. Why don't you just tell him that? Why don't you give him a shiur? I'm sure Moshe Rabbeinu could give him a much better shiur than me. And convince them. You believe what I'm telling you? The answer is, we all believe it. Question is, how much? How much realism? I can tell you that I believe 100% is the Rebbe Shem gives Parnassa, and we're just making a condition, but it still seems pretty real to me that when I work here and get a paycheck, that I cause my paycheck. Oh, I believe it 100%, yes, intellectually, but Lamaisa, right, how I live my life exactly, and how I really feel it, and how real it is to me, I doubt if it's 100%. I doubt it very much. So we still function to a certain degree, right? So to say, it's not the army that wins the battles. So at best, we probably feel, well, you know, it was the guns and the mortars and the missiles, but God helped too. But it's not like that. It's not the guns or the mortars or the missiles. It's Kulo Hashem, and we're just a facade. Now, how many people really, really feel like that, emes lamito, it's very, very difficult. We believe it, it's emes, but it's very hard to integrate it and make it 100%. So Moshe knew he could give them a shiur, and they would agree, but he wanted them to feel it, because they're going to have to function like that 100%. Not like us, that we function intellectually one way, and lemaisa other ways. Yes?
Is it possible that maybe you think that because you choose to do a certain shabbat, that Hashem will grant you that you're more willing to...
Yeah, 100%. Whatever. The HaKadosh Baruch Hu, since he told us to make the Hishtaglis, that in itself is a source to get the result. And if you don't make the Hishtaglis, it's a reason not to get the result. It's not just a trick, right? But it doesn't cause the thing directly. It causes the Rabbanu Shlolam to either be favorable or disfavorable, right? Or to make the conditions that would make it possible for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to do for you what you need. That's for sure. It does have an effect. It's not just a facade. But the effect isn't cause and effect. It's a two-stage kind of thing. In the end, the Rabbanu Shlom is the one who causes the effect. And again, we all can say we believe it. There's a very big difference between believing something and really, really feeling it. There's a difference between the two. You have a friend that you believe, you would trust them with your life. Believe everything they say. They never lie to you. Your back is to the wall, and they say to you, how come they took the clock off the wall that was always there? What is your initial reaction? To turn around and look. Why? Don't you trust them? But because seeing it makes it more real. True, you believe them. But when you see it, it's more real to you. Right? It tells the Rosh Hashiva, gives another example. In America, in the parks, they used to have a certain dark green paint that they use for all park benches. At some point in the past, I don't think it's like that anymore, there was one color that all park benches were painted. Now, if you walk into the park one day and you see a sign that says wet paint, and you see that the bench is glistening, what is the natural reflex reaction of almost every person when they see a sign like that and the bench? Put your finger on the thing, look at the paint. Why? Don't you believe the sign? Don't you see that the thing is glistening? Why do you have to touch the bench and look at your finger and see that it's wet paint? Because there's a difference between believing something and really feeling it. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu wanted. They should feel it with all their being, right? And be committed to it. They tell a joke. There was an atheist who fell off a cliff. And he knows he's plummeting to his death. And he looks up to the heavens and he said, I never believed, but God, if you're there, show me a miracle and I'll believe in you and be your faithful servant forever. And all of a sudden, a tree emerges from the middle of the mountain, like pushes itself out of the mountain, and the guy gets caught on the tree trunk and he's hanging between heaven and earth. An open miracle. And he looks up and he says, thank you, God. And he's hanging there, and there's no more response. So he looks up and he says, God, what would you want me to do now? And a voice comes out of the heavens and says, let go of the branch. Thinks for a few minutes, he looks up, he says, anybody else up there? No, you can believe, but what it means to let go of the branch, right, that already means that you don't only believe it, but you really, really feel it. And it's real, it's not so easy to let go of the branch. So Moshe could have convinced them. They all understood exactly what we understand. The question is, how real was it to them? How much were they going to be willing to lead every bit of their life according to it? So Moshe felt, therefore, the best thing to do is to let them go and see that their philosophy can't be right. Why? Because there are a few givens. One given is God promised us that we're going to conquer Eretz Yisrael. One given. Second given, it's going to happen naturally. The Derech HaTeva. Now, if they would go and survey the situation, what would they see? That there is no way, the Derech HaTeva, that they're going to conquer these enemies. So there are three givens that don't go together. You're going to conquer the enemies. It's going to happen naturally. And you can't do it naturally. How do you resolve the contradiction? There's two ways of resolving it. One way is we made a big mistake. We thought that naturally means we're going to cause it. True, we can't naturally cause it. But that's not what naturally means. Naturally means God causes it just like he does miracles, except it's going to look like natural. So we don't have to be able to do it. We just have to make the attempt. And then God will make it happen miraculously in the guise of nature. That's the conclusion they should have made. What did they come back and say? Look, God said we're going to conquer these nations. God said it's going to happen naturally. We see we can't make it happen naturally. Therefore, it's not going to happen. God said, he changed his mind. Because he told us that it's going to happen. It happened naturally, and we understand naturally means we're going to cause it. And that's what they meant. They said, Chazaku mimenu. The enemy is stronger than God. Because God tied his hands. Because God himself said he's going to make it happen naturally. Naturally means he's giving it over to us. And we can't do it. Maybe God understood we could do it when we were on a higher Madrega. We're not on that Madrega. We can't do it. If we can't do it, it can't be done. And even God can't help us. Because he said it's going to happen naturally. He's relinquished his control. He's given the control over to us and we can't do it. That's the conclusion they made. They should have made the other conclusion. We made a mistake. Naturally doesn't mean that we do it. Naturally means God does it in a way that looks natural. Because we did our establishment. That body can be. So that was called Atzas Hador Hazer, or Atzas Meraglim. The idea of sending Meraglim, the idea, the mistake of that generation, where they confused nature with them being in control. So Moshe said, I could talk myself blue in the face. They'll believe me, they'll say they believe me, it's not going to hold up Lamaisa. Best thing, let them go and see with their own eyes and come to the right conclusion, hopefully. Because if they don't, they're never going to come to the right conclusion, and they're going to go into Eretz Yisrael, right, and say that I held something back from them, and then when they have to fight or whatever, they're going to give up hope. So better to take the risk. And hopefully they'll come to the right conclusion. So Moshe goes to God and he says, look, the people want to start on this new hanhaga of Derech HaTeva. So God says, okay, it's fine with me. They want to now start practicing the new hashgacha. Fine, but I can't tell them to do it. That's not Teva. The Derech HaTeva, right, the Gadol Hador goes to God and says, okay, God, tell me what to do. Doesn't work like that. That's not Derech HaTeva. That's not even Derech Nevuah. Because a Navi can't control when he gets Nevuah. God decides when he gets him Nevuah. So Moshe comes to God and he says, what do you think we should do? God said, it's a self-contradiction. You can't come to me and ask me what to do if they want to start doing things B'derech HaTeva. So how do things happen B'derech HaTeva? You go to the Gadol of Israel, and he, according to his Das Torah, understands what God would want in this situation. So God tells him, Shlach Lecha. You decide what you think I would want you to do in this situation based on your understanding of Torah. That's how things happen, B'derech HaTeva. I can't command you. That is a self-contradiction of what you wanted to happen. So you do it on your own, understanding what I would want you to do. That's what it means. And I'm not going to command you because I think it's a terrible idea, but if you want to do it, go do it. Who would ever hear such a thing and do it? But the Rebbe Shem says, I can't command you. That's not what you want. The people want it to happen naturally. Naturally, you don't come and ask me what to do. You understand what I want because you're a what's it called, a Talmud Chacham? You have Das Torah. So Shlach Lecha, I'm watching. If you deem it necessary, based on your Torah knowledge, fine, send it. Now, so Moshe Rabbeinu is aware, not that there's a plot from these spies, that these people are wicked, but there's a mistaken hashkafa of the generation that's called Atzas Meraglim that is prevalent. And for that reason, he's sending them. On the other hand, he prays for Yeshua is going to have to be the leader when that Hashgacha will be. Moshe Rabbeinu was the leader when there was Hashgacha Nisus. Yeshua is going to be the leader by Hashgacha Tzivis. And if he doesn't understand, then everything is lost. So Moshe davens for him. At least the leader should understand what's going on. Kar Yoshiach from the Atzas Ador Hazeh. God should save you. Not from the plot of these spies. Moshe didn't think they were making any kind of plot. But they had a bad Hashgacha. Your Hashgacha, this should be right. You're the leader. You're going to have to understand under what Hashgacha you are leading Klal Yisrael. Now, so when they went, they were tzaddikim. They were tzaddikim with a mistaken hashgacha. That doesn't make you a Rasha. They made a mistake. They had a wrong idea of what teva is. But when they came back, they already made conclusions lemaisa because of that mistake. That made them rishoy. When did the risha start? From the time already that they made the mistake. In other words, the mistake in itself doesn't make you a tzaddik or a Rasha. It's a mistake in Hashgacha. If you never act upon that mistake in Hashgacha, you're surely not a Rasha. But if in the end, because of that mistake in Hashgacha, you come back and do something that's a rebellion against Hashem, so what caused that rebellion? Your mistake in Hashgacha. That means from the very beginning already you were no good. Because that Hashgacha already came out l'maisa to be bad. It's like wine, Rabbi Yerucham says. Right? It turns sour. When did it start turning sour? When there already were bacteria in it to begin with that already started the process of fermentation of sour. But it wasn't sour when the bacteria started working. It only became sour at the end. But when did the process start? Already when the bacteria were there to begin with, even though there was no change. But those bacteria led to this change. Therefore, the wine already was basically potentially sour from the beginning. Now the fruit. Moshe Rabbeinu understood that if their mistake continued, and they still in their bones felt, again, they could say whatever they wanted to say, and believe whatever they wanted to believe, but until it went into their bones, and they really felt it, Moshe hadn't yet reached what he was interested in accomplishing. What is something that clearly makes it clear that it can't be that nature means you're in control? Fruit, crops, vegetation in Eretz Yisrael. Why? Because the one thing that you can't control in Eretz Yisrael naturally is fruit and food. Why? Because you can plow and plant and fertilize and do everything. There's one ingredient that's necessary that without it nothing will grow. Water. And in Eretz Yisrael there is no natural water supply except for rain. Everything depends on rain. You hear it on the radio all the time, how far the Kinneret is down because it hasn't been rained. It's not like Egypt where there is the Nile or whatever, and you can fool yourself into thinking that you can, the Nile will overflow and you'll use the water. If there's no rain, there is no water. There's no water, there's no crops. And you can't control the rain. That's one thing that even till today, people can't control. You may be able to sometimes seed clouds, but if there's no clouds, you can't make them. So, that matzeach, that key to rain is in the hands of the Rabbanu Shalom. So, it's pretty scary. So now, Moshe said like this. I know sometimes people should not come face to face with nisyonos, with things that hit them right between the eyes that give them a test, because it's not worth taking the risk. True, it may strengthen you, but it may obliterate you. But if you anyway are on the negative side, this can't make it worse. So Moshe said like this, if you feel you already have come to terms with what's true, that nature is not, you are not in control, it's God, and you are only fulfilling the condition, if you've convinced yourself of that totally, don't take the fruit. Because the fruit's a big mistake. because the fruit says to me, everything's going to happen naturally, and I can't control this. And it could push you this way and say, and therefore I give up hope. Or it could push you this way and say, therefore I have emunah that the Rabbanu Shlom is going to do. One of the two, but it's very, very intense. If you don't need the chizuk, forget about the fruit. Don't confront it. That's why Moshe said, the hischazakhtem will akach them, the pre-horus. If you need the chizuk, then I want you to take the fruit, because then it's worth the risk. Because without the fruit, you still don't believe. With the fruit, you're going to come to something that's going to force you to either go one way or completely off the cliff. The fruit's going to tell me, I can't be that we can control everything of its nature. It must be that we're wrong, that God is still in control, even though it's going to happen naturally. Or, wow, in Israel, everything has to happen according to nature, and we can't even control our food supply, forget about going there. That's the other way of interpreting. That's the other thing the fruit can bring you to. So if you need the chizuk, it's worth the risk. Because if you don't confront the fruit, you're still no good. But if you don't need the chizuk, stay where you are, don't confront the fruit. Therefore, both Midrashim are very perfect. Kalev and Yoshua, who were not part of that Eitzah, they didn't have that bad, Hashbapa. They were convinced that nature means that God's still in control. They didn't need to take the fruit. In fact, Moshe Rabbeinu told them not to take it. Only this chazakhtem, if you need chizuk. We don't need the chizuk. But they knew the other 10 needed it. So they forced them to take it. So they didn't take because they weren't part of the Eitzah. Not that they weren't part of the plot. They weren't part of the Hashkok. And the what's it called? But they may force the other 10 to take because they did still have the Hashkok. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, if you need the chizuk, then take from the fruit. And lastly, it says they came back on the 8th of Av, and that night was Tisha B'Av, and they cried. So God said, Atem b'chisem b'chiyah shel chinam, ani ekbo lachem b'chiyah ledoros, o b'chiyah shel mamash. You cried for nothing, I'll give you something substantive to cry about. Every year, from the time of the Churban Beis HaMikdash and on, you'll cry for something that's worthwhile, not an empty cry. What's the idea? It's not just that the Rebbe wants to punish us and spite us. It's a tikkun. The cry then was a cry of yish. They cried because we can't do it, and it can't be done, and we give up hope. On the other hand, crying on Tisha B'Av is just the opposite. If we felt that it can't be done and it's finished, we would have come to terms with it long ago. We wouldn't still be crying. Because there's a gzeira shahameis nishtakach minalei, something that's finished and over with, dead, a dead issue you come to terms with. The only reason we continue crying on Tisha B'Av is because we really believe it's not a dead issue. We believe that God eventually is going to redeem us. So we cry over the past and hope that the condition will change. Crying on Tisha B'Av is a different kind of crying. It's not crying because you've given up hope and you're bemoaning your fate. Crying on Tisha B'Av is like a baby crying. Why does a baby cry? The baby says something's wrong. It's wet, it's hungry, cold. It can't really comprehend, right, what exactly is wrong. But he knows that if he cries, there's going to appear usually someone in the form of a woman that will know very, very well what that child needs and take care of the need. That's the crying of a baby. The baby doesn't cry out of giving up hope. It cries because he knows the cry will make an impression and somebody will come and help. We cry on Tisha B'Av like a baby cries. Ribbono Shel Olam, you promised to redeem us. We can't do it, but we know you can do it. So we're crying out to you like a baby, you do it. That's the tikkun for the crying of Yish, the crying of giving up hope. You cried for nothing. You cried because you thought I abandoned you. That if you can't do it, it can't be done. I'm going to give you something to cry about this same night for generations to be misakin that, where you'll cry not because you've given up hope, you'll cry because you haven't given up hope. Because if you have given up hope, you should have stopped crying long ago. So that's the tikkun for this. But that's the basic idea. The basic idea is that it wasn't a some kind of plot that Moshe was aware of or anybody was aware of. It wasn't that the Meraglim had intention to come back with a bad report. But because of this overall mistake in Hashgacha, their conclusion was, we can't do it, and therefore we have to save Klal Yisrael and make sure they don't go. Because God himself said it's going to happen naturally, and we can't do it naturally, and therefore they thought it was Pikuach Nefesh. How could we let Klal Yisrael destroy themselves? And don't tell me God will help. God said it's going to happen naturally. So God's tied his hands. That, in my estimation, is the Parashas HaMeraglim, and that's the lessons to be learned from it also, what the true Hashkafa is based on what their mistake was. Okay, one more thing from the parish, a little bit lighter and shorter. Kalev and Yoshua, when they, Kalev specifically, wanted to impress upon Klal Yisrael how good Eretz Yisrael really was. So they said, Tova ha'aretz ma'od ma'od. The land is very, very good. Now how do you quantify something like that? If they said it was good, how much less would that have been than one very good? And how much more is two varies than three, less than three, and more than one? Right? How do you understand very, very good and not very, very, very good? Right? And one very wouldn't have been enough? What's it mean? Very, very good. Ma'od, ma'od. So I was thinking to explain it the following way. The simple idea is that ma'od, ma'od means an amount without limit. Just like having ma'od, ma'od, shval ruach. Whenever you say ma'od, ma'od, it means without limit. That's a simple meaning. I want to say a more meduyak meaning. Avraham Avinu, when he was told to go to Eretz Yisrael, so the Rabbanu Shem told him that it's letovascha lech lecha. Rashi says lecha, letovascha ulahanascha. For your good and your pleasure. What does that mean? There are many things in this world that are good for you, but they're not pleasurable. For instance, when my mother, Aleh HaShalom, used to say to me, eat your vegetables, they're good for you, I knew they didn't taste good. Because if they tasted good, she would have appealed to my taste buds and not to the fact that it was good for me. So there are a lot of good things in this world that are not tasty or pleasurable. There are a lot of things in this world that are pleasurable that are not good for you. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Avraham, Eretz Yisrael is not only good for you, it's also pleasurable. You'll see. If you have the right hashkafas, you'll understand that Eretz Yisrael is both good for you and you'll enjoy it. That echoes something else. Says in Kriya Shema that you should love the Rabbanu Shel Olam b'chol me'odecha. So there are two explanations of b'chol me'odecha in Chazal. One is b'chol ma'od, chol with all your material possessions. Ma'od means material, physical possessions. And the second, b'chol nida u'mida shu'modecha. With every nida, whether it's good or bad, the Rabbanu Shel Olam sends your way, serve him and realize it's all for your good. It's for your good. It's litovascha. It's for your good, even though you may not enjoy it. Even though you may be getting yisurin. But ultimately, it's for your good. And the Rabbanu Shel Olam promised, if you have the right hashkafas, not only will Eretz Yisrael be for your good, it'll be pleasurable too. In Kriya Shema, we have the idea of one ma'od is ma'odcha, your physical, material, actual good, and mido, mido, what's for the good, right? The first one is the pleasurable, the second one is what's for the good. Gamzu litova, the chol mido, umido, shumode, lechosh. That's what Kalin and Yoshua said. Tova ha'aretz, ma'od, ma'od. Both meanings of ma'od. One, the actual physical, material good, the pleasurable things, are there. But not only that, it's also good for you. It has the other ma'od. The chol mida umida, even where Eretz Yisrael appears to be not so pleasurable, but it's good for you. And therefore, if you have the right outlook, everything in Eretz Yisrael will be both pleasurable and good for you, because the two come together there in Eretz Yisrael. So that's the ma'od ma'od. It's not just an idea, very, very. It's two ma'od. One that signifies pleasure, and one that signifies what's good for you. And that's what they said. Eretz Yisrael has both things, and it's exactly what the Rebbeinu told Avraham Avinu, lech lecha, letovascha, ulahanascha, for your good and for your pleasure. Eretz Yisrael has both of those concepts in it.